The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Welcome to the first reading of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina for October 2023. Our theme this month is the annual mountain issue, Autumn in the Smokies. We have an absolutely lovely picture on the cover. It's a close-up of a mountain stream, no doubt in the Smokies. The camera is low to the water. There's a lot of lichen-covered rocks interfering with the path of the water, which makes it much more interesting. And as usual in this type of photo, the camera is on a long shutter release, which causes the little white bubbles at the top of the water to kind of meld together and make the water look like it has a froth on top of it as it cascades forward toward us over the rocks. The upper half of the picture is a sea of yellow. It's a canopy of trees, all of which have golden or yellow-colored leaves, and the sun shining through it just makes it spring out and be absolutely gorgeous. We are going to begin reading, as we always do the first reading of the month, with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. She entitles this month's column, Now Starring. Two tickets, one for my mother and one for me, slid toward us through a half-moon window. A fountain drink with crushed ice, larger than I could handle, more than I could finish. Behind a glass counter, popcorn, warm and buttery, cascaded from beneath a stainless steel lid. The kettle tilting, then snapping back to refill. A motion reminiscent of the tippy-top hat drink bird that mesmerized me as a kid. My mom led me through a door, and we took our seats midway up the aisle. The lights dimming us into darkness. The Cinema 2 movie theater opened in Asheboro in 1972, when I was 2 years old, with a showing of a John Wayne Western called The Cowboys, which I didn't see on account of only being 2 years old. But 4 years later, there I sat, legs dangling over the edge of a cushioned chair, staring up at a screen as wide as the sky, ready to experience my very first movie, Walt Disney's Dumbo, a fantastical story of the little elephant with giant ears. And he could fly. Somewhere above us, a projector flickered to life, softly whirring, beaming its shaft of light above us, and then trumpets, tubas, flutes. The screen filled with images, twirling, spinning, dancing right in front of me. I was immersed as a story that I loved from my cherished little golden book was transformed into a spectacle larger than life. When it was over, I clapped and begged to see it again. Over the years, my affection for the world of movies grew. When I was 9, Christmas morning brought me a Super 8 movie camera with a projector and a portable screen. I filmed everything around me. My grandparents standing beneath a cluster of mistletoe in the driveway. My dad chopping vegetables for his homemade soup. Our beloved beagle Muffin curled comfortably on the sunlit hardwood floor. My movie-going adventures persisted, too, with weekend afternoons watching Superman and Grease and Raiders of the Lost Ark. On one occasion, I climbed into the truck bed with my neighbor and her little brother, accompanying their uncle to the North 220 drive-in in Asheboro for a showing of Halloween, a movie in hindsight way too mature for my tender years. My heart raced like a rabbit through the whole film, but I loved how we all shrieked and shielded our eyes, united by the collective fear. Throughout high school, I caravanned with a group of friends to see Bull Durham and Shag and Dirty Dancing, movies that felt rooted in places that looked like home. Shag was set in Myrtle Beach, but the soundtrack was filled with oldies music we blasted from WZOO AM radio in Asheboro. My friends belting out, "Oh, What a Night," from the back seat of my car. And we all lost our minds when Johnny lifted Baby out of that water in Dirty Dancing, a moment immortalized at Lake Lure. As teenagers ourselves, we were caught up in the exhilaration of new romance, the screen in front of us filling with images, twirling, spinning, dancing, that we hadn't yet experienced. I'm still enthralled by movies, but now I marvel at the real-life settings, images that unfold in front of me all across North Carolina. I've felt the powerful rush of water from Hickory Nut Falls. There it is in The Last of the Mohicans. And traced Robert Redford's path across the top of Fontana Dam from A Walk in the Woods. I've savored a serene moment at Lake Lure, my legs dangling over the edge of a dock, embracing a view of the mountains, larger than life, and somewhere above, golden sunlight beams, illuminating this shimmering water, these magnificent mountains, this glorious scene, this awe-inspiring show. And now, this month's photo essay, The Cherokee Way. In a land that has remained mostly unchanged for thousands of years, Cherokee culture continues to evolve. With renewed energy, citizens of the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians are shaping their own narrative. Written by Katie King. We have a couple of pictures here. One is on the left-hand side, the title being on the right. It is a picture of two waterfalls, actually, one coming from the left and one coming from the right. Neither are very large, but they're coming from two different areas of a peak, and they're joining together in a little pool and then cascading down the rocks toward us. And on the right is a picture of an old mill. It is a medium blue wooden building with a red roof tucked right at the edge of a forest at the base of a hill, right along a river with a bunch of rocks in it. You can see the big water wheel there. And the caption says, "The Oconaluftee River meanders into Cherokee from the north past the iconic Saunuki Mill. From the east, Soco Creek cascades down a 50-foot double waterfall before the two waterways meet south of town." Overleaf, Museum of the Cherokee Museum. "The Museum of the Cherokee Indian is not a history museum," says Executive Director Shana Bushyhead Condill. "Nor is it an art museum or a natural history museum. We're telling the story of a living people, she says. So we're all those things and more. Now in its 75th year, the museum, one of the oldest tribal museums in the country, is constantly adapting as Condal and her team explore how best to tell the ongoing story of the Cherokee. Part of that is educating visitors through thoughtful exhibits, of course, but an even bigger part, perhaps, is community outreach, empowering citizens of the tribe to recognize, as Condal says, our own agency, our own power, and innovation. They're at Tasali Boulevard in Cherokee, and they have a website, very simple, mci.org. There are several pictures here. One is the back of a man standing looking at two very large photos on the wall. One of them says Choctaws on the left, and the other says Cherokee. And each one has a gentleman. And I must say, from these photos, they do not look like Native Indians, so I don't know the nature of what's going on there. Down below, there's a close-up picture of a typewriter, but its symbols are not ones that you and I would recognize. They must be of the Cherokee language. And on the right, there is a kind of a totem pole. Let me read the caption so I get this straight. The 22-foot statue outside the Museum of the Cherokee Indian, carved from a single giant sequoia log, honors the man named Sequoia who developed the Cherokee syllabary, shown opposite. Perhaps that's syllabary or syllabary on the keys of a typewriter, as I suspected. So this is a picture of a very thin, tall face, unnaturally thin and tall, I would say, and some kind of headdress on his face, very wide lips, kind of in a little bit of a frown, looking at us, and it's mounted on a double pedestal of flagstones in front of the museum. Okunalufti Indian Village. Every year, a few local high schoolers get their first jobs at Okunalufti Indian Village, which began in 1952 to complement the outdoor drama Unto These Hills. The experience often ignites a passion for their culture. They fall in love with learning and being able to educate others, says Laura Blythe, program director for the Cherokee Historical Association. Delegates take groups past Cherokee dwellings that appear as they did during various time periods. They also lead discussions with artists who demonstrate weaving, pottery, wood carving, basket making, beadwork, and weaponry. You get to ask questions and you get to dig a little bit deeper, Blythe says. Our goal is to make sure our guests understand who we are. They're on Drama Road in Cherokee. Rather a long URL, but it begins CherokeeHistorical.org, and you can go from there. At the top, we see some people who were guests, obviously, seated on a three-tier set of bleachers, looking at some Indians dressed in Native Indian costume, and they are dancing underneath some thatched roofs here. At this particular moment in time, most of them are bent over with their arms crossed in front of them, and they're going around in a circle. There are also some pictures here of some belts with Indian designs on them, and a man scraping a stick or slapping it into the water. I'm not sure what that's about. The caption on the next page may tell us. And then there's a woman who looks like she is doing some weaving. And she has gray hair, a round face, and a big smile as she looks at us and does her work. Karen George has been finger weaving scarves at Okunalufti Indian Village since 1998. On the opposite page, which I just read about, visitors can watch traditional Cherokee dances like the bear dance and the bear beaver dance, in which participants try to hit a stuffed animal in a lighthearted recreation of hunting practices. And so that's why this person did not look like an Indian who was whacking with the stick at the ground. He's trying to recreate that activity. And over leaf now, Cherokee Indian Fair. In the intense, fast-paced game of stickball, the grandfather of lacrosse, players battle for control of a small leather ball using netted sticks, tackling their opponents as they try to score goals on either end of a field. Sometimes called Indian ball or the little brother of war, stickball was once used as combat training and to settle disputes. Today, the game encourages unity among Cherokee communities through friendly competition. It's a highlight of the annual Cherokee Indian Fair, a beloved event featuring a parade, carnival rides, exhibits, live performances, and more, now in its 111th year. That'll be October 3rd to 7th at the Cherokee Expo Center on Equoni Road in Cherokee. And you can look at the website CherokeeSpecialEvents.com for their calendar of events. There's another picture at the top of the page here, which has a caption. Let me read the caption first. Rides and games are a big draw at the Cherokee Indian Fair. The sport stickball is primarily played by bare-chested boys who wear no padding, just like it was in 1947 below. And so we see the two pictures. The one from 1947 is black and white, as you might expect, and the boys are running past some visitors who are normally dressed, and they're just wearing shorts, and they have their little sticks with the nets on the end of it to capture the ball out in front of them as they race forward, and that's what we see at the top, although these boys at the top have red and blue shorts on, and I don't know what the colors were in the black and white picture, but I do see white there. But they all look like they're having fun. And on the left-hand side, there is a traditional carnival ride where people are seated together in pairs under a big disc to protect them from the sun, a ride that goes around at a 45-degree angle. Not very dangerous, not very exciting, but just fun. Cherokee Bonfire. With the Oconaluftee River flowing nearby and a fire crackling on its banks, Oconaluftee Island Park comes alive with impassioned Cherokee voices. In the evening, guests sit on benches and blankets around the fire and listen to stories, myths, legends, and ghost stories that have been passed down through generations. Dressed in 17th-style clothing, each ambassador has developed their own unique style. Some showcase skills, tools, or crafts. Some incorporate music and dance, making each experience different from the one before. Bonfires are held at Oconaluftee Islands Park from 7 to 9 p.m. on Sundays, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays through October 31st. You can visit the website, visitcherokeenc.com, and look up for an events schedule. Right above that caption, there is an Indian with a, let me see, what would I describe his face as? Slightly threatening, I-mean-business face, as he's holding, I guess you'd call it a tomahawk. I don't want to mischaracterize the instrument. I don't really know what it is. It's something black, like a black stone at the top of a stick. And he is wearing a shirt that's kind of puffy, but it's rolled up at the sleeves, which, again, makes it more puffy. And he has two straps across his chest. And in the center, there's some spikes sticking out. I guess that's to make you not want to go tackle him from the front. And he's wearing what I would call a red skirt and leather boots that are light brown, and he's standing on the grass in front of a large tree. And on the left, we have one of the storytellers. We can see him. He's all dressed in red, got a microphone, and he's wearing a hat. We can see the fire burning in front of him and some people vaguely outlined in the night sky behind him. And it says, Okinalefti Islands Park is a gathering place for both locals and visitors who enjoy interacting with Sonny Ledford and Dustin Tramper, who's the Indian on the opposite page, during the bonfires that are held four times a week from June through October. And now, Quala Arts and Crafts Mutual. The country's oldest Native American artist co-op began in 1946, at a time when tourism to the newly formed Great Smoky Mountains National Park was taking off. The goal was to preserve Cherokee heritage while providing a source of supplemental income for tribal citizens. Since the beginning, artists have been paid up front for their work, and profits are distributed evenly among co-op members each year. Today, the storefront and permanent collection include more than 3,000 items, many of which bear tags acknowledging their indigenous creators. They're at Sisali Boulevard in Cherokee, and the website is Quala, that's Q-U-A-L-L-A, artsandcrafts.org. Two very nice baskets are here. One is oval in shape, and the other is much taller and is round, and uses multicolored reeds to form patterns on the outside. One of the patterns is very regular, and the other is slightly irregular. And then we see the inside of the store here. Baskets woven from river cane, as I just talked about, or white oak have been a hallmark of Quala Arts and Crafts Mutual since it began in 1946. That year, baskets accounted for nearly half of the co-op's revenue. Today, they still command attention on the display at the center of the shop. We turn the page and we see more items from there. Quala Arts and Crafts Mutual carries the works of more than 350 artists across a variety of traditional and modern art forms, including weaving, wood carving, pottery, beadwork, doll making, and basketry. Some of these are a little hard to describe. These are some hoops with feathers hanging down on the inside. I can't tell whether they're on display or all part of one display, but it would be hung up as a very decorative item for sure. Then we have a mask carved out of wood. This particular mask is a tall, thin face with something wrapped around the forehead, and on the man's chin is another little figure carved in there. And then it looks like a piece of pottery with intricate designs on the outside, and somebody is holding, I have to be honest with you, I don't really know what it is. It kind of looks like he's holding a duck's head, and he's facing the duck toward us because it looks like eyes on either side and a beak in his hand. And I think the beak is carved out of wood, and then either a different wood or a different method of carving is used as it goes back to form the head of the duck, which seems to be carved with close-knit feathers. Overleaf, so tsa la ji. The daughters of a seamstress, Nancy Manny, and her sister, the late Johnny Ruth Manny, started their clothing business at the kitchen table, sewing in the evenings while working full-time. In 2017, they opened So Sa La Ji, whose name is a translation of the word Cherokee. In addition to reproductions of traditional attire from the 18th and 19th centuries, Nancy designs her own modern, culturally inspired clothing and fabrics, some of which are printed with characters from the Cherokee syllabary. It reminds people of the language which we are losing, she says, but there's a revitalization of everything in the culture. It's big right now, and I'm glad we can do our little part. They're on Paint Town Road in Cherokee. We see a very nice red fabric with some white beads curved in patterns on it, and not quite sure what this light colored item is. It almost looks like a shell that's been cut open, but I suspect that's not what it is. And some different color fabrics also woven onto the red fabric behind. And here is a dress, which is a sort of an ivory color with a very nice red belt decorated with some little white beads. And then there are a couple of necklaces on it. There's a caption beside it. It says, Nancy Manny created this linen trade shirt and wool skirt and leggings based on what Cherokee women would have worn in the 1700s. She also hand-stitched a historic piece for a collection of native dress for the Smithsonian Institution. So I guess that's a merger of a trade shirt and a wool skirt, but the belt makes it look like it's all one piece. Overleaf now, Kittuwa Farm, 7 miles from downtown Cherokee, at the site of the very first Cherokee town, EBCI citizens nourished the body and spirit. Dating back about 10,000 years, Kittuwa, which translates to Mother Town, is recognized as the Cherokee people's place of origin. At its center is the Kittuwa Mound, atop which stood a council house, the political and spiritual center of the tribe. Once 15 to 20 feet tall, the mound now rises just 5 or 6 feet above the surrounding earth, following 175 years of non-indigenous ownership. But in 1996, the EBCI reclaimed stewardship of its ancestral homelands. Today, citizens tend to small farms and garden plots around the mound, growing foods that have been staples of the Cherokee diet for thousands of years. Potatoes, greens, pumpkins, berries, and the three sisters of beans, corn, and squash, which are traditionally raised together. By utilizing the land this way, Cherokees connect to the spiritual power of this sacred place and help sustain their community. You see on the left a big patch of green, flat area on the ground with some connecting roads. It says EBCI Extension Director Shumper Walker and Horticultural Operations Supervisor David Anderson encourage members of the tribe to grow food for themselves and the community in the fields surrounding the Kittuwa Mound. And then there's a picture of two men at the top holding a very large vegetable and some smaller ones in a basket down here on the side. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.